Current date and time, March 31, 2025, 0753. Evil revealed. The tragic event of the recent passing of Gene Hackman and his wife is an interesting example of how truth uncovers error, no matter how many different variables are involved, in order to bring it forth so all the dots can be connected and understood. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, provided to all humanity a textbook of Christian Science entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, and she further states about herself and the authorship of her writings that she was a scribe unto orders, and the orders were the orders of God. On page 146, she states, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she states the following. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. From page 330, immediately after that statement, until 340, 11 pages, she provides 32 topics. At the beginning of the textbook, she provides three quotes. The first one are the words of Jesus recorded by John in the Gospel of John. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The second quote is from Shakespeare. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And the third one is a quote from Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. If you connect the dots on those three quotations that she felt was so important that we should understand those before we even begin to read anything else in the textbook. It's recommended that one recite those mentally before they do read or study anything else in the textbook. The primary topic of this recording is to direct one's attention to the fact that truth reveals error or evil or animal magnetism or anything that is ungodlike. No matter how well the evil has been hidden or materialistic plans have been made to cover it and keep it covered forever. But just like a mushroom that grows when it's covered, that's exactly what happens to evil. Because evil is never satisfied, because satisfaction, completeness, and wholeness is a quality of love. Evil knows nothing about love. It knows about deceit. And it uses every conceivable materialistic trick to try to carry out its purpose. But it has no power to do anything by itself. It has to have a personality, a catalyst. It has to have a home for the suggestions that come from the belief of evil in order to exist. Someone or some group or everyone has to accept it and let it live within them and be expressed in some way for it to exist. So the easiest way to get rid of an evil suggestion, and it can come in any number of forms, anywhere one may be in their thought or physically, under any circumstances, any time, and it usually comes when we least expect it and don't even realize that it is not true, but only fake news. Through the catalyst, it attempts to mock truth, and it uses words from the Bible and from people that are believed to be honest in order to get its instruction, suggestion, to be accepted and followed and broadcast and multiplied. One place that is an excellent way to begin the day is to recite mentally, and one may also be in a position to be able to do it verbally, depending on their personal situation, but to mentally at least recite some important facts about God. The Bible begins with the book of Genesis, and the very first words are, "In the beginning." Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean "in the only." And she provides words such as revelation to replace words such as creation. In other words, if the only existence that there is, if you accept the words "in the only," then the only existence that there is a representation of truth, which means that it's perfect. Otherwise, it wouldn't be truth. It would be a lie or an attempt to mix truth and a lie, or good and evil. So we might want to consider that everything that comes to us as a fresh idea about God or God's manifestation, which of course is included as part of God, because God can't be God unless there is a manifestation. What would God be a God of? Nothing. Without the manifestation, God is nothing. Without a painting of a beautiful landscape, without the painter, there is no landscape. You could even look at it on a materialistic viewpoint and say you have a plumbing problem, or an electrical problem, or a carpentry problem. Without the one who fixes it, it's not going to be solved. On a spiritual basis, we can look at that as being a lack of understanding, being the problem, and the one that fixes it being the one that has the understanding. They know what the principle is that is involved to bring about the solution. An architect. Someone has an image in their mind of having a beautiful skyscraper building. But in order to have that manifested, there has to be all of the individual pieces that comprise that to be brought to fruition. There might be hundreds or thousands of workers. There may be hundreds of architects and engineers, millions of calculations, algorithms that are comprehensive to be applied in order to come forth with the fruition. We look at it with awe and think, wow, that is wonderful, without having any concept of what it takes to get there. Well, that's what the first quotation is all about. You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We are very fortunate in that we can look at all of the elements that have already been revealed and make them our own. In other words, adapt the generic nature of truth to an individual experience. One of the beautiful statements that one can utilize and convert it from a generic to an individual experience is the scientific statement of being on page 468. Now that is in the chapter entitled Recapitulation, chapter 14, and that is, as the name implies, a summary of the salient points of the first 13 chapters. And it's in question and answer format, so it stays right on target to give the very important elements that answer the question. For example, the whole textbook talks about God, but she has provided us in a few words a very succinct definition of God on page 465. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And on page 587 in the glossary, she provides this definition of God: the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. On the same page, she gives us a definition of good, God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. She gives us the definition of man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Page 591. And just so we understand or have the basis of understanding the difference between spirit as substance and the belief of matter as substance, here's the definition of matter on that same page, 591. Mythology, mortality, another name for mortal mind, illusion, intelligence, substance, and in non-intelligence and mortality. So it's another name for intelligence and substance. So we must not confuse when we think we're doing something in an intelligent way. Are we doing it based on matter as our foundation and as our substance? In other words, are we believing that matter is real substance? If so, visit the actor's retirement home. As an actor, they pay into that facility, which gives them the right, if they're out of money at the end of their career and need to have a place to live with the various care facilities that they provide, then you'll get a flavor for how matter is not substance. Some of them have made tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars, and they have nothing left. Whether it was foolish spending or whether it was stolen from them, or any other number of reasons, they ended up with nothing. So when they're living in that facility, even though it may be a very pleasant facility, and I've not visited, so I can't tell you what my view is of it, but the point is that it has to be getting the realization to be understood more clearly that money is not substance, that a big home is not substance, a life of frivolous living is not substance, world travel is not substance, because it comes down to the basis that they need food, shelter, and clothing, and the only place they can get it is where it's free. It's free at the moment because they paid into it for their entire acting career, probably. So when she gives us the definition of matter, take it to heart. I'll read the complete one, the complete statement on it. Mythology. Mortality, another name for mortal mind. illusion. Intelligence, substance, and life in non-intelligence and mortality. Life resulting in death, and death in life. Sensation in the sensationless. Mind originating in matter. The opposite of truth. The opposite of spirit. The opposite of God. That of which immortal mind takes no cognizance. That which mortal mind sees, feels, hears, tastes, and smells only in belief. Here is her definition of mind. Page 591, same page. The only I or us, the only spirit, soul, divine principle, substance, life, truth, love, the one God, not that which is in man, but the divine principle or God of which man is the full and perfect expression. Deity, which outlines but is not outlined. Here is a generic statement referred to, which is a scientific statement of being, that can easily be applied for the benefit of human experience, for us or anyone else. In its generic form, it says, there's no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. Here's an example of how you can take that generic statement and apply it to an individual experience. Let's suppose that you consider an accident where someone suffers some kind of a personal injury. Could be anything. Just substitute the words. I will just put in the word accident, but you could put in the specific problem that there was, that was related supposedly as a result of the accident. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in an accident. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. The belief of an accident is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. The belief of an accident is unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and I am his image and likeness. Therefore, I am not under the belief of an accident. I am spiritual. Now, something that is very highly recommended is to then look at a book by a genius Christian Scientist, Frederick L. Rawson. The book is entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And there's a section on applied treatment that lists 1,315 different problems and their solution. Mary Baker Eddy says that we need to find the problem and deny that it is real and to reverse it with the specific truth that applies to that particular problem. And she gives us a few examples scattered throughout her writings, but the most complete, comprehensive, easy to find statement of truth about any particular problem is in the book just referenced, because it's in alphabetic order and it lists, as I mentioned, 1,315 different problems. Now, when I say he was a genius, what is a genius? Well, it's someone that is not a sheep, but someone that is a go-getter. In other words, they have determined a purpose, and they may have three purposes going simultaneously, or more, or maybe only one. But think about just one purpose. What they do is they live it. They live the purpose. If they learn something, say the mathematical tables, they apply it in an individual basis, just like I applied the scientific statement of being to the belief of an accident. In other words, they make it their own. They put it in their own words and apply it to what they're doing. Because everything has a principle. Everything that is true and lasting is based on a principle. Whether you're building a skyscraper building or a single unit efficiency apartment. That's just an example. It could be anything. It could be digging a ditch. It could be fixing a plumbing problem. It could be fixing a relationship between a man and a woman or the parents and their children. It could be anything. Any experience in your life. If it is worth fixing, then there's a principle that's involved. It's like Jesus, when at the hearing for his trial, he was asked, what is truth? He didn't answer. Because he knew that no matter what he said, it would not be received. They might hear words, but they wouldn't understand. And he knew it was futile to ask because there was a crowd of people there that wanted to see him dead. Because he had brought forth some radical ideas that they were shocked to hear and wouldn't accept. So they thought getting rid of the one that was stating them would get rid of the truth behind what he was saying. But obviously it didn't. It hit it, at least starting in about 325 AD it did. It hit it until 1866. 1,500 years. What, 1,541 years? until Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science. Until she discovered the science that Jesus utilized in what other people called miracles, but she called natural events of getting rid of evil, overcoming the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Jesus had a different view than everyone else. This was long before Shakespeare gave us the statement that there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Jesus knew that, and he demonstrated that. He proved it to be true. Because when he saw somebody that was blind or somebody that was dead or anywhere in between, a leper or any other problem, he didn't see the problem as being real. He denied it as being real. Even when someone asked him who did sin, I think it was his disciples, who did sin, this man or his parents, I think that was the fellow that was blind when he was born. Actually, he wouldn't have said that if he was if it was when he was born, because the innocent child wouldn't be able to say that. But in any event, he said it's neither this individual nor his parents. He said the reason for this to come up right now is for us to glorify God. And that's exactly what he did. He healed the situation, which was glorifying God. In other words, it was giving credit to God, and it was proving this scientific statement of being, that there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in blindness. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in death. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in a broken fingernail, or a broken finger, or a broken hand, or a broken arm, or a broken body. By the way, body means everything in our consciousness. That is our body. Everything in our consciousness. And that means everything we're thinking, everything we're saying, and everything we're doing, and everything we see or perceive someone else doing, or the whole world, or a group of people. Everything that is in our consciousness is our body. These various things that are being stated in this recording are just some of the thoughts that one may want to review and put in your own words. Just make sure you stick to the truth. If you take any advanced classes in almost any topic, and I mean really advanced, where people are the top people in their field that are teaching or giving a lecture or a seminar or being quoted or whatever, the common theme that you will see that runs through all of them is that you probably won't remember anything about it if you only hear it once. If you hear it twice, you're going to remember more than if you heard it once. If you see it three times or hear it three times, you're going to hear it more than twice. You're going to understand it. You're going to remember it. But what you really have to do is to make it your own. You have to put it in your own words as if you're a teacher. Teach yourself. Put it in your own words and live it. That's how you can really understand something. You have to live it. Now, obviously, the more comprehensive the exposure is to the person that's presenting the idea, the better it is. So if you just hear a quote, you might have to go out and do a lot of research in order to fill in all the missing gaps But you can't steal from someone else. One of the valuable things about studying something that Mary Baker Eddy wrote is that you should look at the big picture and not just try to get a quick few lines or a few words and think that's the whole picture. Think about those first three quotes at the beginning of the textbook. Think about the definition of God, the definition of good, the definition of man, the definition of spirit versus matter, the definition of mind versus mortal mind. Think about the scientific statement of being and how does it fit in there. In order to really advance in your spiritual understanding, first of all, you have to have an attitude, like Einstein suggests, and that is about curiosity. He says, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. You see, if you question, you are probing in your own thought. What do I know about this already? What have I proven to be true myself? It's like you have to have gone through so many experiences that were failures, believing that matter is substance, and that a false sense of love is love, and seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling with material senses are the only way you can do it, instead of getting an appreciation and understanding and living the spiritual senses. Because if spirit is the only substance, we have to be utilizing spirit with everything we think about. But we have to be disgusted, we have to be fed up with the lack of fulfillment and wholeness of a matter-based life to be ready to look for something better. If you need to get confidence in something better, read the last 101 pages of the textbook, pages 600 to 700. There are 85 different people who had 486, I hope that number's right, I think it's 486 healings, problems that were solved. They may have had one problem in mind when they started reading the textbook and perusing it. Now, perusing it means thorough, deep study. They may have had one problem in mind, and when it was all said and done and they did their testimony that Mary Baker Eddy felt was so important that she put it in the textbook, I mean, out of the millions and millions of people that were healed, she chose 85 people. And her final edition was published in 1910. And they've been publishing healings for the last 115 years. Admittedly, the number of healings, the number of people that are Christian Scientists, the number of people that, number of churches, number of practitioners have had an extremely steep decline. And they're almost down to nothing. All the major cities had large number of churches. It was common to have 40 or 50 churches in the largest cities. Now they have maybe two or three. They had buildings that qualified to be historic monuments to architecture. Most of them are all gone. What happened? What happened? How could something that promises to provide a life of heaven on earth all but disappear. Well, in 325 AD, the governments and the churches were so concerned that they would lose control of their audience, government for their taxes and churches for their audience, that they had a meeting between them called the Council of Nicaea, N-I-C-A-E-A. We have a book on it on the website. The website name is Mary Baker Eddy Institute, but the name of the website is mbeinstitute.org. Robert Putnam. He was a doctor of chemistry, one of the finest Bible scholars next to Mary Baker Eddy, and he wrote a book, 169 pages, 10 Bible lessons. And in those 169 pages, that basically is a summary. And the meat of it is in the references that he provides from the Bible. And in some cases, he recommends reading the entire chapter of the reference. But hundreds and hundreds of pages of references, but it's condensed down to 169 pages that basically covers every salient point and every important character in the Bible from Genesis 1 through Revelation. He's the one that discovered, at least made public, that Revelation was not written by John. Revelation was dictated to John by Jesus. If you read his book, you will understand why. And you also understand about the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. So basically what they did is they named Jesus God. He was never called God. He himself stated in various places in the Bible that he was not God. He was the Son of God. But people believe what they're told over and over and over instead of researching it themselves. All you have to do is read the Bible and it tells you right there that he is not God. In fact, one time they asked him something, I think it was, I don't know whether it was the greatest, it could have been when they asked him, what is the greatest commandment of all? They said, good master. They called him good master. And he said, why call me good? There's only one good and that is God. And how does Mary Baker Eddy define good? I recited it to you earlier. God, Spirit, omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, and omniaction. That's what good is. So good is God. God is good. Jesus is not good. Good is God. And it's spelled with a capital G. Something else Mary Baker Eddy did is she introduced a whole new alphabet where if it's capitalized, it means God. So if good is capitalized, it means God. If life is capitalized, it means it's one of the synonymous terms for God. And her definition is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So if any of those seven terms are capitalized in her writings, it means God. If it's a lowercase, then it means a human definition instead of a divine. Divine means perfect, referring to God. The title to this recording is evil revealed, and the event that inspired this recording to be made is the tragic passing on of Gene Hackman and his wife. And it is included and made available for you to listen to because it is a comprehensive example of how many little details that may be required in order to uncover the truth, and as recited from the very first quote at the beginning of the textbook, in order for it to be positioned there by Mary Baker Eddy, it must be really the most important thing in our life, to know the truth, so that we can be set free, free from all of the restrictions that anything unlike truth suffocates one with. We cannot experience life if we're living a lie, even if we are unconscious of the fact that we are doing so. One of the many beauties of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, which is really what Christian Science is that everything is practical, can be applied to our daily life, and must be applied to our daily life if we want to be free. If we want to have a confidence that is built on truth, what Mary Baker Eddy has revealed to the world is the only known way to get it. As was stated, a genius determines a purpose and pursues it with their life. They devote thought, speech, and action to it on a continuous basis and never give up. Of course, they have to monitor what they're doing. They have to be analyzing and making sure on a continuing basis that they're not following some hidden self-will that they're not even aware of. They have to listen and let the truth talk to them, because if they're going down a path of self-will, the wrong thing to do is to be pursuant in perseverance without wavering. Because not only do we want to waver, we want to stop it and start all over. So we have to make sure we're following something that is going to benefit all mankind. Every party that is involved has to benefit. Otherwise, we have to stop the negotiation. And of course, that's what every pursuit of a good purpose is. It's a negotiation. Daily, continuous. Because we are barraged with every kind of evil and temptation that one can imagine. And the more important the pursuit is of the purpose, the more obstacles will try to get in our way. I guarantee you there's not a single individual that has had a great success without having tremendous challenges and maybe failures on the way. Anyone that is truly successful has experienced problems. If you talk to somebody that has never had a failure, then they've never done anything. They've never had a great success. failures come with the territory of the path to success. The path to getting a better spiritual understanding automatically comes with challenges from the belief that we were born of a woman and a man, and that we are saddled with the belief that we were born a sinner because we're of the genealogy of Adam and Eve. So we have to continuously work on undoing that universal belief and work on overcoming the belief of time. One of the several reasons it's easy to recognize Frederick L. Rawson as a genius is that not only did he have as worthwhile purpose as anyone could have in his life on many fronts, but he pursued them in a methodical manner, in a disciplined structure, and brought forth a benefit to all mankind. He overcame the belief of time. He discovered how to heal back in time so that the healing was effective prior to him even being contacted about there being a problem and requesting his assistance for a healing. Over 500 times, he proved that to be true, that there was no time and time could be mastered. He was looking out a window with a friend by the name of Spalding, who is also an author on our website, along with, of course, Frederick L. Rawson, and we have about 100 authors. And this was about 1910 or 15 or 1920. In other words, 100-plus years ago. There wasn't much in the way of motorized vehicles, and particularly trucks, that were capable of carrying a heavy load. So there was a man that was driving a wooden cart full of rocks who had an animal that was pulling the cart. And he felt uneasy about the tailgate, apparently, something in the rear. And so he stopped and went back there to examine it. And when he was back there, something alarmed the animal, and he raised up and dumped the entire load of rocks on the man. Totally covered up. And Mr. Rawson and his friend Spalding were looking out the window at the very moment that was happening. And Mr. Rawson said these words: "There is nothing but God." And with that, the man rocketed out from underneath the rocks and was completely free of any discord. He could have been dead. It doesn't give the detail because there's nobody that was digging around and finding him. You know, the whole thing, including the healing, was so instantaneous that there was no reason to give more details. Five words. Now, did he just say the words? Could you say the same thing and have the same effect? Yes, if you had the understanding that Mr. Rawson had. No, if you didn't. Peter tried to walk on water when he saw Jesus walking on the water, but he sunk. This gets back to what was said earlier in this recording, that we have to make it our own. We have to make it our own. We give you specific recommendations on how to be able to heal anything that is needed to be healed, whether it's your life or someone else's. Now, I will tell you that it's not an easy task to do this with someone else. If someone were healed by a practitioner, is that the end of the story? Most people say yes, because the healing is done. Whatever the problem is, the healing took place. But that's not the truth. The truth is, if someone is healed, they need to become a serious student of Christian Science, or they will have other problems crop up. To really be healed of one thing, you have to strive to be on the path of infinite progression, working toward concrete being. Infinite progression, working toward concrete being. You need to be so inspired by the healing that you say, wow, I want my whole life to be like this, not just one problem, to be healed. And then you take up the serious study of Christian Science. That's the only way you can do it. Otherwise, you will have the problems that all of humanity has. Everyone is dependent upon someone else, and then they end up taking drugs forever. And maybe they don't get any healing, ever. I mean, the medical profession has deaths that are percentage that are outrageous. But they have such control of the media that they're not advertised. But if you look at what malpractice insurance premiums are, you're going to find a taste of the failures. The system of divine metaphysics is not any different than any other profession. If you want to be the best, you have to pursue it like you want it. You have to have the gana, the sincere desire. You cannot be a sheep. You've got to be a leader of your own thoughts. Like Shakespeare says, what are we going to put into our consciousness? What are we going to be thinking about anything? If we're in an area that is having a big storm, do we just accept it as being real? Or do we do metaphysical work about it? Mary Baker Eddy had someone that came to see her, and she said, if you're walking out in public and you see a stray dog, or if you see an accident, or if you see someone in a wheelchair, or, you know, with any visible disability, what do you do about it? It happened to be a man, and he said nothing. He didn't know what to say. And so she said, are you a Christian Scientist? Then he knew exactly what he should have been doing, and he wasn't. So he had to admit, yes, Mrs. Eddy, I know what you mean, but no, I'm not doing it. No, I'm not a Christian Scientist. In fact, that's all he said. No, I'm not a Christian Scientist. She said, are you a Christian Scientist? And he said, no. But he was thinking with the thoughts that I told you. He knew what her message was, her reason for asking, and he wasn't doing anything. He was like everyone else walking on the street. Well, there it is, it happens. there it is, the accident happens. There it is, the person is in a wheelchair or whatever the disability seems to be. And, or, yeah, there's a stray dog that's scrounging around for food. Yeah, these are all true things. You see, we're living a lie if we just accept something that is not godlike. We teach you the system of divine metaphysics. It's not turning on a switch. It is radical. The human mind does not easily accept anything that is the opposite of what it believes to be true. And therefore, if you introduce a new idea that is the opposite of what the human mind has thought was true, it's radical. The opposites are always radical because that's what they are. They're opposing. They're not just sitting there. They are actively opposing its opposite. Are you ready to really oppose and introduce to your thought the opposite of what you have believed to be true forever? If you happen to be fortunate and you were raised in a Christian Science family, you started out getting truth fed to you constantly. There were four kids in our family, and we had the privilege of being excluded from attending courses in school that taught about a material sense of your body and how to be healthy and all that kind of stuff. So I was never exposed, nor my three sisters. The four of us were never exposed to that. And every day we studied a lesson that was provided by the lesson committee from the home office church. And that lesson is readings from the Bible and the explanatory and relative writings from the textbook. Mary Baker Eddy wrote 16 other books, but the Bible lesson substance, content, is all from just the textbook. And Mary Baker Eddy set it up that way. She gave us 26 topics that are to be repeated every 6 months. Now, they're totally different content because there's a lesson committee that goes to all of the Bible and all of the science and health and chooses selections that are related to those 26 topics that Mary Baker Eddy provided. Christian Scientists do not have pastors in their church. They have readers that read from the Bible and the relative passages from the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. So that keeps it generic, as opposed to personalizing something. Because the first thing you need to do, if you're going to have any kind of a spiritual life, is you've got to take out the human element and look at the divine. You have to look at the divinity of the individual instead of the personality. Just like the scientific statement of being. It's provided in a generic fashion that can be molded to any problem that you need to solve. Any problem. There is no limit. Everything has been healed in Christian Science. Sin, sickness, disease, death. Everything can be healed in Christian Science. And we teach you how to do it. And if you follow the instructions that we provide on how to do it, you will have success. And if you need more confidence while you're doing it, read those 101 pages at the end of the textbook. Now, with Frederick L. Rawson's book on those 1,315 problems, we recommend you do not read that chapter from beginning to end, which is applied treatment. The rest of the book, you can read it to your heart's content. But that chapter, you should only read the specific problem that you want to heal. Otherwise, you're doing the same thing that they teach in schools. You learn about all the problems. You don't want to do that. You only want to research a single problem that you're dealing with, or if you're dealing with three, whatever. In fact, the average person that is in that 101 pages was dealing with five or six, because 85 of them ended up with 480 some healings. So yeah, you might have five or six problems. And if you read about one problem in there, it might say, see also, and they give you the title, because it's related to it. So yes, you might be researching five or six things to heal one problem because they're all interrelated. But you don't read the book to read 1,315 of them. You only read the ones that are related to what you want to heal. You don't want to fill your thought with all of these other problems. That is the last thing you want to do. That's why you don't just believe an accident. As mentioned, when Jesus saw someone that had a problem, he didn't see them having a real problem. He saw a misunderstanding that was presenting itself as real. But he couldn't accept it as real. Einstein says, if you have a problem, you cannot solve a problem on the same level as where you saw the problem. Wherever the problem occurred, you've got to be higher in order to solve it. You've got to go to a higher dimension, or you can't see the problem. You are in the problem. You can't solve a problem if you're in it. You have to get above it. You have to go up and forward to solve the problem that is behind you. If it's all around you, you're not going to solve it. There was a professor that took a big white sheet to his class and hung it across the viewing area. Had a little black dot in the middle. Everything else was a big white sheet. So he hung it up. He said, what do you see? They thought he was crazy. We see a big white sheet. What do you think? He said, look careful. He said, look carefully. What do you see? Oh, they finally discovered the black dot. They said, that's what you want us to recognize, the black dot. That's what you want us to focus on. He said, no. He said, you need to be aware of it, but your focus is on the big white sheet. In other words, you have to see the big picture. You can't see the big picture if you're focusing on the black dot. We have a video called How Big Is Your Problem? Just go to the menu. It'll be right in the main menu. How Big Is Your Problem? From time to time, we have it on our home page. It's only three minutes long. After watching that, you will just realize how small your problem is. I highly recommend it. 3 minutes, investment of your time. I believe you will be grateful. Oh, talking about grateful? I didn't finish the reasons why Christian Scientists barely exist today. So they had the Council of Churches in 325 AD, And then Mary Baker Eddy rediscovered the lost element of healing in Christianity in 1866. She passed on in 1910. She arrived on this earth in 1820. And she had nothing but problems. Her whole life was nothing but problems. She was a frail individual. She barely went to school. And her education, which is one of the finest that you will ever find anyone has, was all done through home schooling and her self-education later. She was deemed to have the second largest vocabulary next to Noah Webster, who was the author of the first dictionary of the American English language. Highly recommended. We refer to the Noah Webster 1828 dictionary all the time. And we have a link on our website where you can go right to the website where you can put in a word and get the definition for free. Okay, so let me tell you what's involved. I already mentioned you have to be exhausted with dissatisfaction of a material sense of life. So that's the atmosphere you have to have in order to enter into improving your life. If you think you're having a great life, you're not interested in improving it. Or if you do, you're interested in only improving the material sense of life. Number two, you have to develop a life of giving. That's what gratitude is all about. You've heard people say, well, I've been successful and now I want to give back. Well, they're starting late. You should start today developing a life of giving. The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. Were you an average student in school? Were you a sheep? That's average. The average person is a sheep. A B student, on a scale of A to failure, is above average. And an A student is above the B student. A plus student is striving for perfection all the time. One of my sisters was valedictorian of her class and had a 4.0, not a single B, for 12 years. I had an employee. 4.0. So I've known two people that had a 4.0. But what's the most important thing about education? They don't teach it in school. They don't teach the most important thing in school. They don't teach what Einstein said was so important. Never stop questioning. They don't teach you how to think in school. They teach you information, which is a waste of time on the most part. If you know how to think, you can get the information you need and you can reason out what you need to reason out to come to the right decision. You don't go to a store to buy wisdom or intelligence or knowledge. The only true knowledge is knowing about God and man and the relationship between God and man. All other knowledge is based on matter and the belief of life, truth, and intelligence being in matter and the belief that you were born a sinner. It's believing that mortal mind is the real mind, that your brain is the real functioning part of your life. Those are all limited concepts. That's looking at the black dot in the sheet instead of the big picture. That's being like the man that would walk down the street that Mary Baker Eddy asked about when she said, are you a Christian Scientist? Do you want to just accept everything that is written in books? They change the books all the time. That's why the 1828 dictionary is so valuable. Unfortunately, after Noah Webster's passing, I don't know whether he didn't have any children or what, but they didn't keep the Webster dictionary. They sold the estate that had the rights to the dictionary to the Merriam brothers. And what did the Merriam brothers do? They used his name in vain. Webster on a dictionary today, unless it's the 1828 edition, means nothing. It doesn't mean anything about the word Webster. It doesn't mean anything about the character that Noah Webster was and represented to the world, which was integrity. It was based on Christianity. He quotes from the Bible throughout the dictionary. Hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of quotes from the Bible. He translated the entire Bible. Yeah, the Noah Webster Bible is available. If you have even an inkling of what politics is about, which unfortunately has become known to be lie and liars, then you'll know that to make something politically correct means that it's making it a lie. So our dictionaries have been turned from truth into lies. If we're going to heal, we have to stick with the truth, not a lie. Who were the biggest givers of all time? Christ Jesus gave his whole life. He devoted his life of purpose to healing and teaching about God and man and the relationship. Mary Baker Eddy sought the first 46 years of her life in getting an education so that she could have a good vocabulary and studied the Bible intently. She's an example of someone that gave up on a material sense of life, truth, and intelligence in matter because she was a frail individual. She couldn't even go to school most of her time that she should have been in school. So Mary Baker Eddy, once she discovered the truth, she devoted her life to sharing it. So that was from 1866 until 1910. And then she shared it forever by giving us 17 wonderful books and setting up a Bible lesson so that we would have something to study to at least have 26 topics. And when she was asked if she minded if anyone else wrote about Christian Science, she said, it is so vast that I invite it, as long as they are honest and they know what they're talking about. So that's a tall order to know what they're talking about. So if we want to be successful in our spiritual growth, we have to be a genius, which means that we have to have that purpose and we have to pursue it with a continuous effort and not give up. Everyone gives up. I don't mean literally 100% of the people, but the average person is an average person. If you want to be a B student, it takes extra effort. If you want to be an A student, it takes much effort. If you want to be an A-plus student, you will have rewards that you cannot even keep track of, because your whole life is transformed, and it'll be difficult for you to even understand all the different parts of it that have been converted to something in a brand new dimension. But if you don't develop and cultivate a life of giving. And giving is not just money. It's everything. You have 24 hours a day, 1,440 minutes every 24 hours. How much are you going to give to helping other people to have a life of giving? How much are you going to give in doing serious, deep study of Christian Science? I don't mean just reading a Bible lesson that is prepared by someone else. I mean really going after it. I would venture to say that most people don't even understand half of the words that they really think they understand. How about hearing? What does hearing mean to you? If you do a word study on the word hear, you're going to find it means to understand. Did you realize if you say, yeah, I hear what you say, what that means is, or should mean, that you thoroughly understand what they are saying, and you relate it to everything else that is related to that topic. It fits in the big picture, like the little black dot. What is the big picture? Einstein was an avid student of Mary Baker Eddy, and he made this statement. Blessed art thou, because everything that is in this book. That's what he said about Mary Baker Eddy. Thou, with a capital T, as if she was God. He's just emphasizing, like people call Jesus Lord. It's just a respectful name for someone that is supposedly at a very high level. Of course, in England, it means nothing. It's a political thing. But Lord with Jesus meant that he was very special. So he called her Thou with a capital T. And this book was Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And he said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. So that would put it about 1946 that he made that statement. Because that's 80 years from 1866 when she discovered Christian Science. Imagine 80 years ago a woman discovered this. You see, he spent his life researching about matter and time and the relationship between time and matter. And he realized that it was all waste. Because when he understood Mary Baker Eddy's works enough, he realized there is no time. And he realized there is no matter. And his whole life was was devoted to both. And what really got him going on Christian Science is his friend Dr. Underwood, who served on the Atomic Energy Commission for the U.S. government. And I guess Einstein was too smart to get on there, because they were studying how to blow up civilization. And all of the experts on that field of physics passed on from radiation, except for his friend Dr. Underwood. And he asked him, well, how is it that everyone else is gone and you are the only survivor? He said, I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy. He said, it is a science. It's not just a religion. So then, eventually, after studying it seriously, then Einstein agreed with Underwood. And he said, he made these statements. This is Einstein. This is all on our website, by the way. He's a listed author. And so, Dr. Einstein said, religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. So what is Christian Science? It's the greatest religion of all time, which is Christianity. And science means that it's scientific. as I've been describing in this recording. You need to know the elements, just like in mathematics, you need to know the numbers of 0 through 9. You need to know all 10 digits. You can't just know 9 of them, or 8 of them, or 7 of them, or whatever. You need them all. The 0 is important. You need all 10 digits. And you need to know the operators, which is add, subtract, multiply, and divide. In divine metaphysics, you have to know the elements, which are principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. And you need to know the operators, which is the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. In a very short explanation, the Word means, what is God all about? The Christ means that no matter what comes your way, you translate it just like Jesus did. He saw somebody that was dead, he didn't see them dead. He translated it to their real self and saw them as alive. No matter what problem we are faced with, we have to translate it just like Jesus did. We have to look at the big picture just like Jesus did. Christianity means that you have enough understanding about God and enough understanding about how to translate things from their visible materialistic view to a spiritual view, and you practice that with understanding what you know about God and man. So you put the Word and the Christ together, and then you're in a position to work on demonstrating the truth, proving it to be true. That's what Christian Science is all about. It's a science of right thinking. Those are the words of the genius, Frederick L. Rassen. And then science is an automatic interpretation of everything in existence. Jesus was at the science level. He interpreted everything to a spiritual basis. It's automatic. You don't have to think about it, it's automatic. The greatest thing in the world that they could teach you in school is how to think. If they taught you how to think, you would realize that Christianity and all these churches, including the Christian Science Church, because it's been corrupted, just like all the other churches, the greatest thing they could teach you is how to think. Because if you knew how to think, you would know that Christian Science is the only solution for your life. Because it's the only thing that has both science and religion. And it works. It works. We teach you how to do it in all these recordings. We have hundreds of recordings. We teach you everything you need to know, but you have to make it your own and live it. And at the top of the list of living is living a life of giving. Be a giver. You have to live a life of giving. If you're not living the golden rule, which is a life of giving, then you're never going to go anywhere. And forget the 10%, and forget just money. You got to do it all. You got to give your time. You got to think about it. When you go shopping, be alert. How can I help somebody here? Who needs help? Is there somebody looking on a shelf that can't figure out what they need, and maybe an elderly person? And so you could ask them, would you like for me to get somebody from the store to help you find what you want? Or maybe somebody that is trying to lift things that are too many, too heavy. Or maybe somebody thought they'd go in to buy one thing and they got their whole hands full of groceries and they're about ready to drop it all. Can you go get them a basket? Or carry some of them over to the checkout counter. Somebody that's already outside the store and they're trying to get things in their car and it looks like they're having a difficult time. I know somebody that was approached when they left a store and a fellow was looking for a donation. He was a young fellow, looked like he was in good shape. Bodily, not disabled or anything, and So the fellow that he was soliciting asked him, well, why do you want the what do you want money for? He said, I lost my job and I don't have money for food. I haven't eaten in 2 days. So he inquired about, you know, what was he qualified to do and what had been his job and profession and whatever. And he found out he was a handyman, and the fellow had a long list of things to do that needed to be done in his home. He ended up hiring him. He worked there 3 months. And by the time when he was done, the other fellow already had a job. You see, he inquired to help. He didn't just give him money. He wanted to find out what the problem was and could he help solve it. And he did. And it was a mutual blessing to everyone concerned. There were some parts to buy and so forth, so the stores that sold them were blessed. He was blessed because he had earned his way instead of just having a gift. And the one that hired him was blessed because he had fixed a list that he had accumulated for several months of things that needed to be done. I'm aware of another situation where a fellow came out of a store and he saw a woman there with a young gal that was in a wheelchair that from physical appearances had no control over her body at all. She couldn't see. She had no control. Okay? As an interesting opportunity, as a challenge, in addition, they didn't speak the same language. So obviously, he figured that he could give money, which he did, and then on the way home, he contemplated how could he deal with this. So the end result was that he printed out in their language the preface and chapter 1, which is on prayer, out of the textbook, Science and Health. And he had it bound where they could, you know, it was a spiral binding that he had made, so they could turn the pages and had a protective covering to preserve the pages and so forth. And he gave it to them, and the mother was very pleased. The daughter couldn't tell what was even happening. But he went back after that, and she had a smile ear to ear. She was so grateful. And she pointed to something. She had it out. She was apparently referring to it while she was there with her daughter outside the store. And she opened it up and pointed to a couple of places. And they were places that were especially inspiring. And it was right in the beginning, because in the preface, it starts out with, to those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessing. And he visits that store a couple of times a month. And then he started taking food to them because they're sitting there without an opportunity to, you know, even go and get anything to eat, even though they're right at the store. And anyway, he's taken an interest in them, and the mother is very grateful for what he's doing, and he's doing some other things. But are we Christian Scientists, or are we just sheep? Many people have skills that they can teach someone else. There's many ways to give, and if we just are creative and want to give, we will find multiple ways to do it. And remember, we have to be on the individual level to communicate with them, wherever they are. We have to communicate on the level where there's going to be interactive communication. The bottom line is, if you are not living a life of giving, you're wasting your time trying to obtain a healing. You have to give first. Don't worry about receiving. Don't even worry about if they appreciate it, if you know you're doing the right thing, because you may only be planting a seed that takes time to germinate. Because remember, the human brain doesn't like to accept anything that's opposed to what it believes to be true. And the more truth it is, the more opposition there will be. Mary Baker Eddy thought that she would be able to revolutionize the world overnight. She said, boy, these churches are going to be so enthusiastic about being able to heal like Jesus did. But what she got was total resistance. There wasn't a single church that adopted what she was doing. People left other churches and went to what being a student of Christian Science. But as far as an institution, no, they're not willing to change. Because they're muddled in sense of material life and intelligence and matter. So let me just tell you real quickly why the Christian Science Church has gone down, because this is becoming a very long recording. Number one, they fought her all the time for several reasons. One is she was a woman. And back in those days, a woman could not vote, could not hold property in her name, and they never were in charge of a business giving instructions to a man. And Christian Science Church was a big business. It wasn't intended to be, but it was a big organization. Thousands of churches and thousands, tens of thousands of practitioners. And it was in like almost every country. And that all happened from when she discovered it up until 1810. So in a matter of, you know what, 44 years? It became the fastest growing religion, you could say the fastest growing business, fastest growing entity, it's a better way to say it, in the world. I mean, it was unbelievable. So, she had resentment from day one. People threw her out in the street while she was writing the book. You know, she was renting, she had no money. And while she was writing the book, they threw her out in the street as soon as they understood what she was doing. Middle of the night. And she was in a cold climate, northeast, New Hampshire and Boston. And then she wrote a manual because she figured it was necessary to try to keep them on track. She said, I don't want to do this. But she realized she had to do it. And one of the provisions in there was that many things required her signature in order to be continuing. And they did everything to convince her to take that out. She wouldn't do it. She said, that was provided to me, my inspiration from God, and I'm not taking it out. So the day that she passed on, they took her picture out of the book. You know, In those days, it was common to have the picture of the author. In fact, even today, they have pictures of the authors all over, on the cover and every, you know, and inside. So they took her picture out of the book the very day she passed on, and had it republished the next day. I mean, she had a machine going for publishing. It was a big facility, publishing society, Christian Science Publishing Society. There were statues all around the northeast of America honoring her. They took them all down, had them all blown up, destructed. Somebody had built a pyramid that was a perfect replica of the one in Giza that had all the prophecies built in. They blew it up and they buried the pieces in several locations so that it could never be put back together. It was the largest piece of granite that had ever been mined and moved. It was obviously not, you know, wasn't the same size. It was built to scale. They've controlled all of the branch churches. And she has a provision in there that every church is to be operated independently. And they could not even copy that manual or that or the bylaws of the mother church to use as an official thing in their own church. They could use the manual for their own purpose, but they couldn't use the bylaws of the mother church. So she did everything possible. She made the statement that they had to be independent, and she forbid them from using the bylaws. The church in Boston was intended to be only for people that lived in the area and wanted to attend it as their branch church. And all the other branch churches were supposed to be operating independently. And that's stating very clearly that everyone is separate. And they even put in a provision they had published in the journal that there was going to be authorized literature, and that was the only literature they were to be reading and selling in their churches. And when she saw that, she really didn't like it at all, and they had already published it in the journal, so she had an errata sheet put in. She didn't even want to wait until the next journal was published, which was monthly. So she had an errata sheet published and sent to all of the churches that said, this is not in accordance with my desire, and I hereby make it null and void, something to that effect. Everyone has the right to decide what they're going to read, and it should not be controlled by anybody. Anyway, because of all of these things, and they wanted to do everything they could to get rid of her, they forbid the people that lived in her home from talking about her or sharing their notes or anything. Anyway, obviously, they became corrupt. They were corrupt in their heart from the beginning, but they really exercised it. And they excommunicated people from the church if they didn't abide by what they said. And so the best of the Christian Scientists left the church, and because they needed to have the freedom. You know, they couldn't talk about Christian Science. They couldn't have a lecture. They couldn't have a meeting. They couldn't have a church without approval. So that's why Christian Science went down. And it's now almost nothing. I'm going to close this. This is one of the longest ones I've done. And it is 2 hours right on the button. I'm going to end by saying, you have to start by having a life of giving. And you will get further ahead if you follow our instructions on how to do it. And we have that in detail. I'm grateful for everyone I've learned from, for the authors in the Bible throughout. Christ Jesus is at the top of the list. And Paul did excellent things, other ones. And also everyone in Christian Science that I've gained so much from. And at the top of that list, I would say, is without a question, is Frederick L. Rawson. And there's other great ones. Wentworth Winslow. Joel Goldsmith. They both had 15-minute appointments. That's three of them that I know of. Rawson and Goldsmith and Winslow. 15-minute appointments, and basically the healing was done. Or, if there was something for the individual to do, which is explained in our recordings. So they were doing probably 20 to 30 or 40 healings a day. I'm grateful for all those people, and the ones mentioned left some very extensive writings, and there have been some other very wonderful people that I've met in Christian Science that I've learned from. I'm going to close with a statement by Mary Baker Eddy that is called The Diapason of Heaven. And she provided to her 1898 class, which was the final class in the metaphysical college that she taught, and everyone that completed that successfully earned a doctorate of Christian Science, CSD designation, just like a doctorate of any other profession. And it's very important to understand the value of these diapasons that she provided. She gave us seven, one for each of the seven synonymous terms. Here's the one with a focus on mind. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. That's from Miscellaneous Writings 206. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen.